Well, happy feast. I need you to say it back to me. Happy feast. Happy feast. That sounded weak. Let's go one more time. Happy feast.
Happy feast.
Oh, you're with me. Good to see you today. Glad to have you here on this Feast of Pentecost. I'm glad to be here as well. Certainly want to give thanks for the special music and the offering, both beautiful pieces. Certainly a lot goes into that. If you have two kids who play piano in the house all the time, I can tell you from firsthand experience how much investment of time from the whole family it takes to get a piece together. I had opportunity yesterday to be in Atlanta as usual, and I saw Andrew Jenkins yesterday and saw him leading songs. And we were on our way home, and we got to talking about Andrew and Leanne here for a few minutes. And somewhere in the conversation, my wife said, "Doesn't Leanne Estes just have beautiful hair?" And I said, "Yeah, what do you mean?" And she says, "It's long, it's flowing, it doesn't ever look like it blows away." And I said, "Yeah, I guess she does." And then I paused and I said, "You know, I was thinking pretty close, because I think Andrew Jenkins has better hair now that I think about it." And so she said, "Okay, so I'll get Leanne's hair and you get Andrew's hair." And I said, "You give me Andrew Jenkins' hair, I can do almost anything." So I'm glad to have them up here on the front row. Last Sabbath, we also had Mr. Gore provide a nice message on Esther. And after listening to Mr. Gore in that message, I found myself inspired to tackle someone else that he had addressed last week in passing. He made mention of. I'm going to ask you to turn to Ruth, the book of Ruth. And we're going to start reading in Ruth 1, and we'll read a couple of verses here. Ruth 1, verse 1, and I'll read. And I'm going to read from the New International Version today for flow of story, because I think it works well here. Verse 1, "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went out to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech," verse 2, "his wife's name Naomi, and the names of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there." And from that basic set of details, we move to verse 3. "Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons." And here I pause, because the book of Ruth recounts the story, as we kind of already have a sense for, of a young, poor maiden whose whole world falls apart when her husband dies prematurely. After just 10 years of marriage, she's then required to go on. And as we go through the book of Ruth, we see the decision she makes that at times, if you watch and read, seems somewhat counterintuitive. They don't really make sense to us. But her character and her actions serve her well. And they provide for you and me today several lessons that we should take on this day of Pentecost. You know, in general, Ruth is a part of the writings of the Old Testament. But more specifically, Ruth is the second book of the Megillah. And in this instance, if you're not familiar with the Megillah, they are actually the five books read on festivals for ancient Israel. Just in terms of background, if you've never taken the time to go and do a little bit of research on it, the Song of Solomon is oftentimes read at Passover. Ruth, which is what we'll cover today, is read at Pentecost. Lamentations, I abbreviated. Typically, it's read on Ab 10th, and you have to really go back and do a historical analysis depending on where you read. In fact, I would probably point you on the web to the Jewish Society. They actually document 9 different disasters that occurred around the time of Lamentations that ancient Israel, which is why they oftentimes read Lamentations. And in this instance, the most notorious being the fall of Jerusalem and the temple. Ecclesiastes is read at Tabernacles, the Feast of Tabernacles. And Esther, which is what Mr. Gore pointed out for us a week ago, is read around the time of Purim, or the point which, as Mr. Gore pointed out in the message, that the Jews took responsibility and defended themselves. And you can pretty much go back to your notes that Mr. Gore provided us on that day. Israelites then traditionally read this book, Ruth, on this day, Feast of Pentecost. So I thought it would then be fitting for us to go through the book to see what's there for our need today. And to do so, I thought we would lay out a framework as such. First of all, let's kind of deal with some background so we understand the history behind Ruth. Then let's understand its content. We'll work our way quickly through the verses. This, again, New International Version provides a nice reader, easy on the ears content to cover. And then lastly, let's identify what you and I should take from this. My title is Ruth, the Feast of Pentecost, and You. Ruth, the Feast of Pentecost, and You. Now, I'm going to guess you still have your Bible open to Ruth, so let's go to verse 3, and I'll reread 3. Now, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. Orpah is not listed there. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her sons and her husband. Well, let's get some sense of where we're going before we go further. Ruth at the time, lives at the times of the Judges, and I'll make mention here of Judges 21, verse 25. And I don't know if you recall what's there, but it says the following. This was a time when men did what was right in their own eyes. In terms of historical context, Ruth was written before the birth of King David, and we wind up seeing David's mentioned at the end of the book, but almost certainly written much later when the two tribes of Judah were set free from their captivity in Babylon and allowed to return to Jerusalem. This was about 1,100 years before Christ's birth. So where in the world did Ruth live? Well, I don't know if you're a map person, but maps oftentimes help me contextualize what's going on here. So if you're on the internet, you could probably go look at maps around the time of Canaan. If you have your Bible, it actually appears on in mine, my New King's Version. Now I'm speaking German. It actually appears in here on map 4 for me, particularly if you're looking for where they are located. They're in Moab, which would be, in this case, right of the Dead Sea. In fact, if you go specifically to where Moab was high elevation, 4,300 feet above the level of the Dead Sea. It was Moab in this instance, and Moab wraps around that east side all the way north, because if you go all the way north and you're flipping through maps, on that far north side are actually the plains of Moab. So farming oftentimes happened here. It was an agrarian society, oftentimes used for grapevines, for agriculture, for grazing of flocks and herds, particularly sheep. So then who is Ruth before we go further? Well, she's a Moabite. In terms of background, and this gets a little dicey here, the Moabites were the descendants of Lot by his eldest daughter. And I'll go let you read that part, Genesis 19, 36 through 37. That was kind of a tough mix where the daughters and the father lay together, and they wound up producing a line of people. Ruth's name specifically means friend. Ruth married Mahlon, which is what you and I have already talked about here. Mahlon's name, interestingly, means sickly. And in this instance, Mahlon and his family were actually in Moab because they had fled their land, Bethlehem, due to famine. And they were looking for a place for food. So that said, that should give us some context. Let's keep reading then in verse 6. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people, in this case Naomi, because remember, her husband has died and her sons have died, had come to the aid of his people by providing for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home. So they were going to go home. Now, home, so we're clear here, home for Naomi, not home for Ruth. With her two daughters, verse 7, she left the place where she had been living and set out on a road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Now, in this case, we have to, again, think through this. Naomi, husband, and sons had moved. They had married Moabite women. And in this instance, if you go back to Deuteronomy 7, you can go do a little history checking here. By and large, they were not supposed to marry. And there were actually penalties, and I'm not going to necessarily go any further for that. But they wound up marrying these foreign women. Largely, the aim here was to not be led astray due to idolatry. And certainly, if you go and look at the Moabites, historically, they were idolatrous people. So in this instance, as we kind of move through the story here, the realization is that Naomi is heading home, and Ruth is going to someplace she's never been. Verse 8, then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you, as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, Naomi did, and they wept aloud. After 10 years of living together, after 10 years of being with this person, after going through three deaths, it was the time to split. And he said to her in this case, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, verse 11, "Return home, my daughters. Why should you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons? Who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband, even though I thought there was still hope for me. Even if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait until then?" Because again, think through this. There still has to be that period of time for those young ones to grow up. "Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." And at this point, they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. So we watch or read this heart-wrenching tale as Naomi then tells her daughters-in-law to go home. But then you know what happens next. In this instance, Ruth says, "I'm not going anywhere. Naomi is my family." And Ruth, without any promise of tomorrow, in shades, if you recall, from Abram in Genesis 12, with really nothing there in the future to hold to or to look forward to, she decides to go with her mother-in-law. She forsakes all and says, "I'm going with you to Bethlehem." So then we read here the words that oftentimes we associate closely with married people, don't we? As we move forward here, as we watch Ruth reply to what Naomi has told her. Verse 16, "But Ruth replied, 'Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where will you go? Where you go, excuse me, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me," I might add here, "in whatever way, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." And Naomi has to stop. Because as we read there at the tail end of this verse, she then realizes that Ruth is so determined that it's not worth her breath to go on. So in verse 19, "So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them." Now you can probably imagine the excitement. I doubt if anyone would be texting. In fact, I know they wouldn't. But one way or another, you know how news travels in a small town. They knew that she was coming, and so they got here, and story spread quickly. And the whole town, middle of verse 19, was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi? Look at all that's happened." Again, background-wise, she left here with a husband. She left here with two sons. She returns with none of the men, and only this Ruth with her. And she says the following, "Don't call me Naomi," she told me, "call me Mara," which means bitter, "because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So we then get the story up till now. Now, certainly, as she just said, she left with a full family, and she comes back with a daughter-in-law. Now, let's reverse roles here. Let's consider you the Moabitess woman. You've had family come into town, and in this instance, Malan, for whatever reason, has courted you. You've been married. You lived 10 years with this family. And if you go back, even in terms of commentaries, it's commonplace at that time, though we don't know if Malan and Ruth actually lived with mom and dad, his mom and dad. But oftentimes, it was commonplace to build onto a house. Okay? So if the father and the mother had a home, they would just add a room there, and it would be very commonplace for them to just move into that room. So in terms of background, Ruth has been with Naomi for this long period of time. And she's seen all this death, and she's experienced death with her own husband. And so then we make our way to Ruth 2. Ruth 2 and verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. If this helps, and this actually helps me here, I'm oftentimes thinking through storylines. The front end of this tends to be kind of dark. Things brighten up here. The lighting's a little more bright. Verse 2, And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." And Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." Verse 3, So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was the clan of Elimelech. Now, is this a shock? I don't know. In a way, this seems a bit strange, doesn't it? But we would probably determine at some point here that God may have some direction in terms of which field she wound up. And in verse 4, just when Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters, the Lord, he greeted them the following way, "The Lord be with you, the Lord bless you." And then they called back to him. And Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, looking at all these people working, he notices this one female. "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' And she went into the field and has worked steadily from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, he approaches her, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in other fields, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you in any way. Don't come on to you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." So we then see, as we move through the beginning of Ruth 2, we see a very different opportunity that God has provided here for Ruth, don't we? And as we kind of go through this, again, background, she's been through death. We don't give any indication, I should have added this, that she had any children, so she had been childless. Based upon the circumstances, she returns home with, in this case, Naomi. And then this brighter tomorrow enters, where in this case, Boaz has opportunity to see her. You know, in this instance, even as we read through this, and this is what I was struck by this, we watch and read of Ruth, and we begin to realize that despite this fact of not knowing where she was going, she certainly had a willingness to work, didn't she? She had this selfless devotion that meant in this case that Ruth was, by all accounts, willing to risk never being married, to be honest. It meant that in this case, she was willing to go to where there was no future, to the land of her enemies, to be real honest. And then as we've kind of covered here, the text does not necessarily say at what point Ruth's heart was touched by God's truth. But in some way, she had to have been impacted by the example of Naomi, and by also the devotion that Naomi showed through all of this. And so then as we go forward, we then see after her gleaning the field, her story only gets better. Verse 10, at this, she bowed down with her face to the ground after Boaz had told her, "You can come and glean here." And she exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Verse 11, Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and your mother and your homeland, and you came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." So we watch Boaz here see Ruth, after hearing the stories, work what from basically dawn till dusk. And in this case, show an example firsthand to him that he is probably staggered by. And he then says, "Let God bless you. You stay here with me." Verse 13, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord?" She said, "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant. Though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." She actually saw herself as lower than his servant girls. At mealtime then, verse 14, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." And when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. And as she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Don't stop her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So she is then taken care of here, isn't she? And if you read through here, and I actually went and did a check here, in terms of the amount that she gleaned, particularly as we move up to verse 17, as we see here shortly, she winds up gleaning about 36 pounds of grain. Quite a bit. You know, I don't know if you go to the gym and do curls. See, this would be light for Andrew Jenkins. But 36 pounds for me is a lot of grain that she would have accounted for here. So at verse, we've worked our way all the way up to verse 16. And verse 17, "So Ruth gleaned the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley," lots of work there, "she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah." Okay? And by that would be 3/5 of a bushel, which again equates to 36 pounds. "She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough." So she had saved that. Verse 19, "Her mother-in-law asked, 'Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you.' Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. 'The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz,' she said." Verse 20, "Then the Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness," God hasn't, "to the living and the dead," she added. "That man, that guy whose field you showed up in, is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Now, I had to actually go back and reread the section regarding kinsmen redeemer. In ancient Israel, if an individual died, if there were brothers in line, and the youngest would have died, or the oldest, excuse me, would have died, it would then be the responsibility of the family for the next one in line, by relation, to then marry and take care of her. And she had come upon this field, and Boaz was then a relative of hers. Certainly divine intervention here. Verse 21, "Then Ruth the Moabitess said, 'He even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.' And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone's field you might be harmed," someone else's. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. So up till now, we get a real sense here that she's been taken care of, hasn't she? She went out in faith. She wound up going to a place she never knew. She wound up in a field in this instance of a kinsman, and had opportunity to glean and take as much as not only she needed, but her mother-in-law needed. Ruth, verse 3, verse 1. Let's go forward. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try and find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking." So behind the scenes, what do we then have happen? We actually have, in this case, Naomi taking charge. Naomi recognizing her own age, recognizing that what Ruth's been through, how much Ruth has devoted herself to her, how much faith Ruth has shown, and says, in essence, this is a blessing from God. And we're going to pretty you up, and we're going to send you down there, and we're going to make sure that you make yourself available for him if this is a blessing that God wants. And so then we read in verse 4, when he, in this case Boaz, lies down, note the place where he is on the floor. So again, Naomi, mother-in-law, coaching. That's a good mother-in-law here. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. And in verse 5, I will do whatever you say, Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. And in verse 7, I get the sense here that for whatever reason, he's eaten, he's tired, and he goes to rest. And when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly. Now, obviously, he was asleep. And it had to have been dark, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now, I don't necessarily know if we're at the end of a harvest. For whatever reason, uncovering your feet must have, awoken him. He must have awoken is not a word, by the way. Don't do that ever again. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. Now, I'm not necessarily sure what he thought. I mean, how many times do you have your feet uncovered at night? Well, my wife does it every night, but I'm used to it, so that's okay. But for whatever reason, he knew someone was in the room. It was dark. And after waking up and recognizing all of this, he's struck by, what do I do next? Who are you? He asked, verse 9. I am your servant, Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. Now, we know the following in this instance, that by him extending this, just like we talked about with Esther in this instance, though there wasn't necessarily the threat of death, she had to be invited into the king's presence. In this instance, we get this action that he then performs. He actually provides something to cover her so that she's warm. And he recognizes respectfully that she is showing herself as a servant of his. And the Lord, he says in verse 10, bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger man, whether rich or poor. She hadn't gone after the big, masculine guys like me. I'm kidding you here. She had wound up thinking through all of this, and based upon recommendation from her mother-in-law, what had she done? She said, this man will take care of you. This kinsman will take care of you. He'll care for you. And she recognized that. Verse 10, Lord bless you, my daughter. The kindness is greater than that which showed. And verse 11, and now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. If we think of a virtuous woman at the latter end there of Proverbs, she was showing these signs. Verse 12, although it is true that I am a near of kin, and he recognized this, he must have obviously done his homework because he knew this. There is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. There's someone that's closer in relation than I am. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem you, good. Let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. So she lay at his feet until morning. but got up there, got up before anyone could be recognized, still dark, and said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." So in this instance, she came discreetly, slept, and then got up discreetly and left. Verse 15, he also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." And when she did, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. And then she went back out. Verse 16, when Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go? So what happened last night?" Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." So we then have opportunity for, in this case, Ruth to have a husband. But something has to happen in chapter 4 for that to occur. Ruth 4, verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town and sat there. Now, he knew the rules of the land. He knew that the nearest kinsman had the rights. So he had to go find this guy, and he had to have witnesses hear the individual say, "I will take responsibility or not." And when the kinsman redeemer, middle of verse 1, he had mentioned, came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, verse 2, "Sit here." And they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back here from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to you, to your attention, and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it," he's good at this, "do so. But if you will not, tell me so I will now. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." He advances this. Now, he doesn't provide a detail, does he? He says, you can go buy this land, but there's something else that's going to come up here. "I will redeem it," the individual said. Then Boaz kind of springs it on him. "On the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." Now, I'm not necessarily sure if there was a blank look on his face. I would guess that he had some knowledge of, in this case, Ruth's experience, her character, because we know in Bethlehem that would have gone around. But there's a likelihood he could not have. One way or another, we get the following, that despite the fact he wants the land, this guy's not ready to be married. And so we then see here in verse 6, this kinsman redeemer say the following, "Then I cannot redeem it." I got a reason why I can't all of a sudden. "Because I might endanger mine own estate." Now, I don't know if he was thinking that she would take half. I don't know here, and the commentary is not clear. But he says the following, "You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." And in verse 7, then we get some very valuable information. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. And so I would guess if you walked around with a whole lot of sandals, you'd been doing business on that day. Verse 8. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, it becomes official, "Today you are witnesses that I have brought you from Naomi," or bought from Naomi, "all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon," purchased it all. "And I have also acquired," here's the best part, "Ruth, the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are my witness." Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May this woman start again a new family for you. through the offspring of the Lord, though the, through the offspring the Lord gives you by his by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." So we've read this long account. It's a beautiful account. It starts dark. It shows in this instance an attitude and a heart and actions that are exemplary. And in this instance, she winds up being rewarded. Rewarded greatly. So then after reading the account, I might ask us, what do we take from this? Well, I have three things that we should take from this. The first is, it's probably most obvious, and you may have come to this immediately, Ruth is faithful. Ruth shows faith. Remember the definition of faith in Hebrews 11:1? Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Ruth had no sense of where she was going. She had no sense of where her life was headed. And yet in this instance, she left her country, she left her family, she left everything she knew, and she followed a path. So what then do you and I take from it on this day of Pentecost, this feast of Pentecost? You and I have to be faithful. This commitment that you and I make at baptism, this commitment that we make whenever we go under the water and come up and have sins washed away and hands laid on us, requires that we do this the rest of our lives. We, like in this instance Ruth, have no idea where this path is going to take us. We don't know what we're going to incur along the way. We don't know how hard life will be. We don't know how easy life will be. But in this instance, we commit, don't we? We are faithful. We are well served then to remember Ruth's example and to strive to follow God. I'm going to ask you to turn to Luke 14. Luke 14. Luke 14. We'll just read two verses here. Luke 14, if you have a red letter edition, I do. And this is in red, so it comes from Christ. Luke 14, in verses 26 and 27. You remember what's written here? You will in a second. I'll read verse 25. "And the great multitudes went up with him, and he turned and said to them, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life, also, he cannot be my disciple.'" Now, to be honest, and you know this, as many of you have inspired margins and notes in there, love less. That's what we're after here. And in verse, loves less family than God. Verse 27, "And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciples." There is a commitment of faith that we make whenever we devote ourselves to God. Whenever we're ready for and acknowledge and go through the process of baptism and repentance and laying on of God's hands or laying on of having God's Spirit put into us, we have to show faith. Ruth shows faith, and we must show that same faith. Second point, Ruth exhibits or shows love. She shows love. Now, in this instance, you know that she shows love because we see it numerous different ways. She shows love to her mother-in-law. She shows love. We get a sense that she showed love to her husband, but she shows love to her mother-in-law. And then she eventually has opportunity, as blessed by God, to show love to Boaz. And in this instance, she does everything based upon recommendations from her mother-in-law on how to act. Now, I don't have to tell you, in this instance, that love, in terms of 1 Corinthians 13, is probably the hardest thing that we do, but the greatest blessing we have. And Galatians 5, which was mentioned yesterday in services with Mr. Kylo's message, is that, as you know this, first fruit of the Spirit. Ruth shows love. And you and I then must show that same love. We, in this instance, are reminded that in making a commitment in terms of our baptism, that at some point it places us in the body of Christ, and eventually that then translates into what? It translates into us marrying Christ Jesus. I will ask you to turn to Revelation 19. Revelation Revelation 19, and we'll read two verses here. Ruth showed love. We must show love. Revelation 19, prophetically in the future, we read in verse 7, "Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife, that's us." We had a discussion the other day in the car. And my little kids in the back, I say little, they're not so little anymore. When my son goes up to my wife now and hugs him and he's almost at eye level, I see myself saying yes sir to him sooner than what I thought. But that said, he said in the back, "Do you think sometimes that God doesn't return because of something we've done?" And I said, "I don't know." And if I recall, my daughter jumped in here and said, "Is God being patient because of something we haven't learned so far?" And I said, "I don't know. I sure hope not. Because if it's because of us, that's a heavy burden to bear, isn't it?" In this instance, God tells us to love. No questions about what our first and foremost responsibility is. To love God with all our heart and our mind and our soul, and to love our neighbors as ourself. So you should take from the book of Ruth love. Third and last, Ruth is loyal. She is an example of loyalty from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. Her example of loyalty is rivaled by few others today. We too must be loyal. We will be, and are now, and will be, a part of God's lineage. Loyalty is rewarded in God's book. And you and I will be the sons and daughters of God. I'll ask you to turn to Hebrews 2. Hebrews 2. This is an encouraging scripture. Hebrews 2 and verse 10. If you remember in 9, it talks about Jesus made a little bit lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone. And verse 10 says the following, "For it was fitting for him, for whom are all things, by and whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to make the author of their salvation perfect through sufferings." No matter what happens in this life, we are to be loyal. Loyal to God, first and foremost. And in doing so, we will be blessed. We've done really three things today. We've talked about the background of Ruth, we've considered its content, and we've also noted three lessons we should take from the book. You know, the book of Ruth recounts the story of a young, poor maiden who loses her husband prematurely, and she must go on. Well, on the surface, when you read the book, some of her actions seem questionable. But the faith, the love, and the loyalty that Ruth shows, they are timeless qualities for anyone called of God. Her story reminds us of God's plan to save all of humanity and to bless those who dedicate themselves to him. You need not turn there. As you might remember, in Ruth 1, verses 16 through 17, she says the following, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." That's Ruth's attitude. That should be our attitude. The story of Ruth is, yes, a story of a young maiden, but it's our story. Let's be reminded of this fact on this high day of Pentecost. Have a great Feast of Pentecost.